Everyone, I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with midwifery business consultation. I have had the honor of meeting Kim. She's a certified professional midwife, and I know you were in Michigan for a while, and I believe you're in Colorado now, correct? I got the honor of meeting your daughter, who you had trained as a midwife first, and then she filtered me your direction. So Kim, tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I started out as a home birth mom in 1991 and 1994. I had my two babies at home, and in between those two births, the midwife who served me invited me to train with her. So I started my apprenticeship. I am a certified professional midwife, but I did my 100% of my training was through apprenticeship. And it took me 9 years because I had two little babies and I was homeschooling, and home birth midwifery is a big deal. And it took me a while to really, I think, get up to speed. So my hat's off to anybody who gets it done, their training done in 3 or 4 years, but I needed more time than that. So, so I finished my training in 2002, and I've been an independent midwife since then. And Hannah became a midwife, my daughter, and she finished her training somewhere around 2000. It must have been 2014. And
awesome. Well, and I know you're a serial entrepreneur. You've wrote books. You are advocating for just kind of a bigger awareness. So if you want to talk about the different books you've written and what the topics and why.
Okay. So I have, I actually have 4 books. The first book is actually about my apprenticeship, and it's called The Midwife in Amish Country. And it was traditionally published. So that's, like I said, it's about my apprenticeship. Then I have Nourish and Thrive, which is a book I've written. I started out really all my handouts for my clients, and the handouts just get to be a bigger and bigger stack. And then people would lose like parts of the stack. And finally, you know, I realized I could probably just bind them together myself. And then one day my husband said, isn't there an easier way to do, like, isn't there self-publishing options? And so I hadn't really thought of it in terms of a book, but I figured out how to put it all together myself. And that's just evolved and evolved. I'm actually just about to put out my most recent iteration of that book. And it's 200 pages, and it has some contributing authors. And it's all about, you know, general recommendations for birthing healthfully, and also troubleshooting if you want to tackle the more common complaints of pregnancy from a natural angle before you get, have to get traditional or allopathic help. Then you can, there's lots of suggestions in there for that. So I love that book. Then I wrote Homebirth Safe and Sacred. And I have one other book that's for basically for students if they want to record, like a recommended reading. It's called One Little Life at a Time, and it's recommended reading, a course of reading, and some pages you can record your, so it would be really if you want to be a CPM, it's designed to sort of walk you through getting the necessary experience plus great reading. But so Homebirth Safe and Sacred is what I would really love to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that's the book I wrote. I wrote it in 1999, I think. Yeah, I wrote it in 1999. And I was inspired to write it when, and it is exactly what the title is. It's all about the fact that home birth is not only a beautiful, sacred event, but it's also very safe. And what inspired me to write it, should I stop at any point and let you say anything?
You are totally fine. I'm taking notes, and I will have lots of descriptions underneath for them to link. You are totally fine. So
that's
the goal. I want your knowledge out to the masses. You're doing perfect.
Okay. So I had this family approached me, and they were lived kind of out east of me. So I'm in Colorado Springs, and they lived east of me in Payton. And so they were a decent distance from the nearest hospital, and they were having their 7th baby, and they barely made it to the hospital the last time they had a baby. And the mom had always been intrigued by home birth and had wanted to have home birth other pregnancies. And the dad just wasn't, he was not there yet. And I think after they almost missed making it to the hospital, they realized that it might be better than, you know, better than having their baby in the car on the way. Yeah. It might be better to have a midwife who shows up at your house, hopefully in time. And so we're doing this interview, and the dad started out saying, well, we know it's riskier, but we're willing to consider it. And I said, well, let's just start with that. Like, for one thing, just on a really personal level, like, if this was riskier, I would never do this job. Like, I really actually care about moms and families, and I have no desire to have a string of bodies following me in my wake, you know, as my legacy, my professional legacy. So if this really was riskier, I would never have done it. I would never, you know, oversee it. My five grandbabies have been born at home. You know, I would like, yeah. So I had to, you know, not be snarky and in, you know, about that, like, hello, I've been doing it a long time now. And it still, it just struck me in that moment, like, do people seriously still think this, that it's riskier? And so then we just talked about the fact, you know, that it isn't. I highlighted the national statistics in the United States, 99% of babies born in the hospital, 90% of those babies under a physician's watch. We have the highest maternal mortality rate in the developed world and it's a rate that's rising. And we don't have good neonatal and, you know, infant mortality rates. They're among the highest in the developed world as well. And home birth accounts for 1% of these births. So the idea that we're even contributing, that we even scratch those statistics, is honestly ridiculous. Yeah. And so then, and I do carry my own statistics, and I shared those with him, and I'm very transparent about, you know, what my own track record is. And so we went on from there. He said, oh, yeah, I didn't know any of that. And they had their baby, and they had a beautiful birth. It was really wonderful birth. And then after that, he said, you know, you really have to figure out a way to communicate what you communicated with us. And it was right. It was right within like 48 hours of their birth. So let me back up a little bit. When we got done with the interview, and I had documents to demonstrate what I, like, they weren't a book, but I said, here's some material to back up what I just said. I'm not just, you know, saying it because I want you for a client. So I provided that material. Then he said, all right, we're ready to be, you know, pursue this since it's safe. And then I was warned through their pregnancy that he usually barely can hang on to his consciousness during the birth, and at the first birth he was dismissed from the room because he almost fainted. And after that, it was just like he figured out, you know, the trick: stay up by his wife's head, don't look at anything, you know, and just be there. And I said, okay, you know, like, they just wanted me to know that I could, you know, he would be worth nothing at the birth. And I said, well, let's just see. Yeah. You know, because this is a home birth. And this isn't rocket
different
science.
And because this is your space and we're guests, it's a very different demeanor. He might have been more anxious in the setting than the birth itself and not realized it.
Right. And so we talked about, you know, in my practice, I would say I catch babies maybe a quarter of the time at most. Most of the time, the moms and dads are catching the babies themselves. And I mentioned that. And I always mention that early on. And then I skim past it. So I don't say, most of the people in my practice catch their babies. Did you want to? You know, I just go ahead and we talk about it. And, you know, we got up to about a month before the birth, and he indicated that he really would like to try. And it was so precious because he said he would really like to try to do that. His wife said, I didn't know you were even thinking that. They both cried. And, you know, of course I was touched. And so we get up to the birth, and it's a normal home birth. It's about as simple as it gets, even though she was 41 years old, you know, and having her seventh baby. She just had her baby in the bath, and they have a nice big bathtub, had the baby in the bathtub. The dad caught the baby. We all end up on the bed afterward. All the children, other children rush in and wonder if they get the birthday cookies. now or not, and admire the baby, you know, like, oh, is that the baby? So nice. Were we going to get cookies or not? Yep. You know, so ran and got the cookies. And it was like in that aftermath where the dad hadn't even gone to this place in his head, like, this could be special. This could actually be beautiful. This could actually be one of the most significant moments of my life. You know, that's when he started to say, you have got to get the information out there. And so he actually helps people self-publish books. And he said, if you write the material, I'll do what I can to get it formatted for you and load it up onto Amazon. And so, so I quick wrote that book, and I got some collaboration from Sarah Wickham on that. I don't know how many of, most of us know who Sarah Wickham and Wickham is. She's a doctor of midwifery in England. And so she, I just let her, I said, hey, would you look at this before I, in case I'm about to make a terrible mistake. And so she looked at it made some tweaks, made some contributions. And so that was amazing. But that's the thing is with the idea in mind. So 1% of women birth at home in the United States. And I have heard in some circles, so in Colorado Springs, we're very midwife heavy. And our actual, I think we actually have about somewhere between 2.5 and 3% of our city births at home, which is amazing. Oh, at home or maybe at the birth center. So it's like pretty great.
But above the national average, like it's kind of like the bar is so low and any little bit is amazing.
Yeah, well, we more than doubled it, right? We
almost
doubled
it.
We've almost doubled it. It's like, whoa, we're at 3%. But so we also have 25 or so midwives serving this area. And there's some midwives who have made it known they don't think we should be training more midwives because there aren't enough clients to go around. And so with what the dad said, even though it's riskier, we'll consider it because we don't want to birth in the car on the way to the hospital. And then midwives saying, you know, there's not enough clients to go around. I just realized that this book really was written to address both of those issues. There's a certain percentage of women. I bet you we could raise the percentage of outside of the hospital birth to at least 10% without trying dramatically hard. There's probably at least 10% of American birthers who, if they realized it was safe to birth at home, they would be thrilled to choose it. And so if we had suddenly 10% of people birthing, desiring to birth outside of the hospital, we would not have enough midwives. You know, we would not have enough midwives to cover that. So probably it would be good if it grew commensurate to our ability to train other midwives.
Well, and I think COVID, it's been definitely a challenge because it's that burnout in the clinical sites and the demand. Everybody's on waiting lists. They were already, and most of the nation, when I talk to other midwives, they're very busy. They get a waiting list. They right away fill up at the beginning. So yeah, to have that interesting mindset locally, but to think, okay, we want to sustain midwifery. We want to expand midwifery, but what is the root of the challenge? The systems, like, okay, if we start marketing and branding and now we have 10% demand, but the current midwives can't even support the 1% demand. What do we do about that?
That's probably without many of us realizing it, the most pressing question.
Most important question. And then it's also, you know, making sure that it's training that is true to who we really are traditionally as midwives. And I, you know, and that's probably a whole other topic is I don't have an interest as a midwife in being becoming an accepted part of the system per se. Like if I have to change who I am as a midwife and the sort of care that I provide. And so that's the thing too, is as a demand for midwives increase, you know, I still am determined to provide my 1 to 2 hour prenatal visits and actually attend the births. I have no interest in waiting until you're about to have that baby to show up at your birth and you get a doula instead of me, the beginning of your labor when, doulas aren't qualified to, you know, monitor heart tones and measure. Yeah, they're just labor support, which is vital, but it's not that, you know, It's not really appropriate for us to use them in lieu of.
Well, and I think it's trying to take that assembly line of the bigger healthcare system and try to say, okay, we're so busy, how do we systematic? And it's a fine line that quality versus quantity insurance reimbursement tries to push that. The healthcare system tries to push that. So we've got to protect the sacred realm, but also stay afloat as businesses and survive and support our families. So I think that's why I've started Midway Free Business Consultation, because I've seen so many cyclical cycles of like, okay, how do we make more midwives? We can't burn out the midwives. We need good business support. And how do we make that possible? So no, I appreciate all your words of wisdom. And if you have any other ideas for midwives on the business side, or even just like if they're considering having a student or expanding in their area, any tips from what you guys have established in Colorado?
I don't know if I do have tips. I mean, I actually am passionate about serving, about teaching. I really am. You know, I think that I really love what we do. And I started out as a client whose life was transformed by what home birth midwives do and what I was allowed to do, you know, what I discovered I could do, you know, and that was amazing. And then that I was allowed space to learn as I was, you know, as I was a student. One of the downsides to my studenthood, like when I said I just wasn't quite ready either to, you know, get done in less than 9 years. I mean, that might be true, but that's not the whole story either. Like there was no like, okay, here we're going to walk you through your apprenticeship. So one of the things I did, you know, I had a couple apprentices early on, and they're basically assistants. And I will say, if I had someone who was apprenticing with me, I did as much as possible, you know, hands-on, get them learning immediately, suggested reading, etc. But I didn't have any kind of a, hey, are you stewarding this gift I'm giving you of learning, learning this craft with my clients who are having their once-in-a-lifetime experience. Like that is a gift that midwives and the families they serve provide students. You know, so I came to a point basically when Hannah was done, and we probably get 10 people a year. So 10 people a year, probably since 2005, that have asked me, can I apprentice with you? And there's no way I could ever,
you know, take anywhere near, you know, it averages out to like one every 3 years, 3 to 4 years or something. I've only had one student finish, and that was my daughter. That's pretty typical too. And it's kind of a heartbreaker to start with someone. And then, so there has to be some kind of way to screen to know, is this person going to finish if they start with me? How do I pick the person who probably will finish so that we're not, you know, like if I take someone and she spends 3 years with me and then she quits, then that's 3 years someone else could have spent training.
Well, and that's what I was talking about. Hard. Part of even on CNMs and CPMs is the compatibility. Like, okay, there's not very many clinical sites. Just like I was talking to Trixie, the Meek president. She's like, oh yeah, we have a preceptor registry. And I'm like, those people probably don't want to be on it very long because they get calls all the time. And I mean, that's a lot for them. If we had like a dating app, some sort of like compatibility, I'm looking, this is the timeline, this is what I love, this is my style, this is my learning. And then we could find compatibility. Like how would that change the clinical opportunities out there? Because I think it is, it's hard to find clinical sites, and the few that are open, I think get very overwhelmed with just phone calls all the time. Yes. How do they effectively filter through them? Maybe if you get bored, you want an extra project to work on, Kim.
Oh, maybe you should do
that. Oh, I've got enough on my project list, but yes, no, it is hard because I think it's that balancing act. We want to have good environments. I hear often about like nurses and midwives eating their young, and we create this cyclical pattern of like, okay, trying to train, and I see how this midwife is acting, whether they're burnout, they're exhausted, they're pushing me to the limit. It's this sorority kind of attitude, and how do, there's a lot that should be in another whole discussion, but I really am excited. I'm going to definitely put all your books on the links for everybody to attach and find out about. And if there's any little tiny words of wisdom you want to add to the tail end of this video, Kim.
I would just say, let's just keep pressing forward and let's broaden our vision and realize that, you know, those of us who have the experience to, the experience required to train, you know, let's really just keep open to that. And like you're suggesting, let's find some ways to make it a simpler process to connect with a good student, you know, student that would be right for our practice and our clientele. But let's just keep, if I was to pick one thing that we really could be doing right now would be make sure the families, that there's 4 million people that birth in this you know, nation every year. And they should really know their options. At least to know. I really don't have a problem with people choosing what they feel is right for them if they were presented with the full spectrum of information to choose, make it their choice from. But when you hear, you know, as a midwife, most of the clients we get have birthed before, and one of the primary themes running through the whole span of time we're serving them, all the years we're serving them, is if I had only known with my first baby or my first couple babies. And that's what, that's a heartbreaker for me.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. So. I mean, like when you hear the stigma and the myths, because I had all 3 of my kids at home and, oh, you're so brave. You're playing with fire. Like, oh, you must be a hippie. You must be like all these stigmas right. Along with being a home birther. And so, yeah, it's that labeling and that assumption of what type of family chooses a home birth. And it should be low risk families choose a home birth. And then you choose a high risk if you're this category. We did it 100 years ago. We need to teach more history.
And I literally chose home birth because I was so afraid of what would happen in the hospital, you know, like as far as I knew I wanted to do an unmedicated birth. And if someone had offered me, I know myself well enough to know if I have a stubbed toe, if someone offered, you know, I don't even do well with that. I just needed to be where there wasn't even an option. And I knew I could just, you know, relax into what my body's made to do, you know, and do it. So it wasn't bravery that chose home birth. I just want to say one other thing too. Any of my books, I'm not great at remembering to say this, but any of my books, and I've had to come up with like a minimum order of like 5 because I end up paying for it via shipping if I don't do it this way. But if anyone wants to order 5 or more of my books and they're willing to wait like 3 or 4 weeks to get them, I can order my author copies for a lot less than the the retail price on Amazon. So I would provide, I always provide for any providers, and this is chiropractors too. I have some chiropractors who buy the books at cost so that they can provide them to their clientele. And yeah, I don't care if you sell them. I don't care what you do with them. But if you, so you could get, you know, the more you buy, then the less.
Are they able to go directly to your website? Like, is there an automatic click or do they email? What's the best way to get that directly?
They should email me at kimosterholzer@gmail.com. I know the Homebrew Safe and Sacred, there is like a place you can send me a message. And I still think I probably haven't changed it to say like there has to be a minimum order or I'm eating all these shipping costs. Yeah. But basically if you're interested in ordering like a mild to moderate bulk order, you can get them for whatever it costs me, because I really do feel like, you know, the more easily this message is, and that's including like Nourish and Thrive, which is a great book. I always try to promote this too. I give it to clients, but I also like share it with midwives, new midwives especially. Like if you're not, it's everything I know regarding, if a client says anything is bothering me, here's what I suggest they do. And this is information that I've honed over 27 years of attending births. So you can get the book and study the book and pretend you thought it up yourself if you want to, you know, it's like, I really, yeah. So well, that's
thank you so much for being so kind with the wholesale rate. I'll definitely put all the information at the bottom of the description, and I have a feeling you're going to get some emails from this with people asking questions like in your brain. So thank you so much for your time today, Kim. You have a lovely day.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.